Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We had Jason on the line yesterday, and he reminded us of the importance of what is stated in Matanya 23 and 24. It's really a continuation on a theme, although the location changes between the 23rd and the 24th chapter. In the 23rd chapter, Yosha is condemning religion. The entire 23rd chapter, if it were being presented today, it would be directed at Christian pastors, Christian priests, the Pope, the Roman Catholic Church, the Eastern Orthodox Church. They would be the in the crosshairs of this. He would not exclude rabbis. He would include them. He would not exclude imams. He would absolutely include them. But the hypocrites, those he said dress in their fancy dress to be seen, have their long prayers in public to be heard, that are pure hypocrites, would be all religious leaders today. And he goes on to detail why he despises religion. And then as Yosha came out of the temple and was going away from the temple in Jerusalem, he turned to them, and this is what he said. He says, "Do you see these things?" And he says, "Truly, I say to you, not one stone here shall be left upon another, which will not be torn down." Now, he was speaking of the place that he had spent enormous amounts of time, the place he had called his father's house. Do you think that he was pleased or disgusted by those who fulfilled his prophecy, Kirk?
Obviously disgusted. I mean, his tone and his words, but just knowing anything about it, you know.
It was Titus and Vespasian of the leading the three Roman legions that not only tore down Yahweh's temple in Jerusalem. You know what they did with it?
You mean the stuff they built another temple later, but they...
Yes, they did. They did.
And they took everything that was worth they get their hands on and went back to Rome and built the Colosseum with the slaves.
Yep, that's exactly right. They did topple every stone. If you go to the West Wall now, or you go to any place around the Temple Mount, you'll see that the giant stones that had been the temple are all toppled. There is nothing other than the foundation of the Temple Mount itself that exists, and very close to that site is where Muslims erected the tribute to the Lord, to Satan, with a dome of the rock. And at the far end, as you would have approached the temple, is now a shrine to Satan in Al-Aqsa Mosque. What the Romans found is that there was enormous amount of gold in Yahweh's temple, and something that at the time was worth even more than gold, lead, because it was used to make weapons, that it was used to hold the stones all together. And as the reason they toppled the temple was to get at the lead, the metal that was used to hold the building together. And they used the wealth that they confiscated to finance the construction materials for the greatest shrine to evil man has ever built. And guess who built it?
Was it Titus?
Well, yes, Titus built it in honor of his great achievement of murdering millions of Jews and of destroying Yahweh's temple. But those he didn't murder, what did he do with them?
Oh, hey, those were the slaves. He had the...
So the Israelites, rather than living in Jerusalem and visiting and living around Yahweh's temple, were now used as slave labor. They had returned as slaves. After being freed by Yahweh from the crucible of Egypt, they returned as slaves, this time to the new crucible of evil, to Rome. And there they built the most decadent, the most repulsive building in all of human history. Nothing compares to the evil that was witnessed in the Colosseum in Rome.
Yeah, you compare that to the Holocaust, and Holocaust is done behind closed doors, evil, on massive scale, but when you do it in public for entertainment, and you eat your hot dog...
Celebrate it.
And celebrate it, and buy tickets for it. Mm-hmm. That's such depravity, you just...
Yes. They made a habit of killing, of torturing, of enslaving, of mass murder, all in homage to men as if they were gods, claiming to be gods, and in the honor of false gods. All to build, to intertwine Roman politics, Roman patriotism, Roman militarism, and the Roman religion. They were all melded together as one in celebrations in the Temple Mount. Out of the Temple Mount, as it was transformed into the Roman Colosseum. It was the one of the most integrated expressions of patriotism. By the way, the same symbols that we use in America, we just copy them. The buildings are the same. Our buildings are all classical Roman. Our symbol is the same as the Romans, the eagle. We even call our institutions the same name that they call them. It's the Senate, as after the Roman Senate. We call it Capitol Hill after Capitoline Hill, the location in Rome where all of this malfeasance was perpetrated on the world. We have an established military, the largest in the world. I mean, we have become the modern incarnation of Rome. Its spiritual, its religious incarnation is the Roman Catholic Church, the two most evil institutions in the world today.
We have our little God statues all over Washington.
Yes, we do. The Romans were loved the obelisks that we have, the George Washington obelisk. The shrines, and they're called, one's called a temple, the other one's called a shrine, to Jefferson and to Lincoln, are both built in Roman style, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Just as the Romans would have their gods seated in the midst of those temples and shrines, we erect our founding fathers, our political and patriotic gods. What did the Romans do if you didn't go along with their propaganda, with their politics and religion?
They crucify you, kill you.
Yeah, they would. Yeah.
Beat you.
Yeah, in America, if you don't go along with the national religion, political correctness, socialist, secular humanism, you're publicly humiliated, crucified in words.
Yeah, but you won't work in any major organization, nobody would touch you. You're a pariah.
Yeah. Yeah. So as Yahusha was transitioning from his wholesale condemnation of the religious establishment and of religion, he stayed on topic when he said that his father's house, the temple, to Yahweh, that it would be destroyed. Because it was religion and politics and patriotism that led to its destruction.
Mm-hmm.
All true. Same exact topic. And it was the ultimate transition into what would come next, because the city that his treasures, his father's treasures, were hauled away to became the basis of what is now the Vatican. And Roman Catholicism. It's prophetic, isn't it? So, in that transition, that's why it's so important to read things in context. He says, do you not see all of these things? Truly, true, all of these things, by the way, not just the temple. All of these things. I want you to understand what we're talking about. Make the connections. Be observant. Notice all of these things. I say to you, not one stone here shall be left upon another, which shall not be torn down. Didn't the Roman Catholic Church, in recognizing the Muslims in a mythical Palestinian state, tear the very nature of Yahweh's love for Jerusalem and his people down?
And then the UN, yeah, and then you, like earlier you were talking about, the UN declares that place as the ancient, great ancient capital. I mean, compared to Jerusalem, give me a break.
Yeah, exactly. And he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, and the disciples, the learners, those who were learning from him, came to him privately and said, tell us when these things will be, and what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age. And Yahusha answered and said to them, see to it that no one misleads you. So, the first thing that he says, tell us when these things will be. What was the thing that he was just talking about?
When the, you're talking about the falling of the Romans destroying the temple? Yeah.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And everything in association with that. And the empowerment of Rome over Yahweh and his family and his home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he's talking about. When did that occur?
70 of the common era.
Yeah, 70 of the common era is when it concluded. This was 33 of the common era, wasn't it?
Yeah, so that's very close. Okay. It wasn't very long.
You know what preceded the destruction of the temple that was the next thing to occur relative to being misled?
Where you had the Kiva raising an army to the occupy.
That was much later. Kiba is 133.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I'm sorry. That's the second.
That's 100.
That's the second wave.
That's 100. Yeah, that's 100 years later. What happened that would be misleading some 10 years or so, 15 years or so, that filled that gap, that void, between the time that he was speaking and the time the temple was destroyed?
Well, we have...
He wrote 13 letters, didn't he?
Yeah, Paul comes along.
That is exactly right.
Shaul.
We'll be, 52 CE is when his first letter was penned. We'll be back. So, Yahusha told us that the home of Yahweh would be torn down. His temple would be torn down. The living embodiment of the Torah would be torn down. Who tore it down, Kirk?
Romans.
Are you aware of anybody who claimed that Yahusha was the Christ, who also tore down the temple, everything it stood for, and the Torah that presented it?
Paul.
What was the title of Paul's sixth letter? Who did he write the letter to?
On the Romans.
To the Romans.
Yeah.
Wow. So here's a guy that comes along. He writes a letter to the Romans, for the Romans, telling everyone that his God established the government of Rome and that everyone should submit to it.
Mm-hmm.
And you see a connection there with, see to it that no one misleads you, talking about the Roman destruction of the temple and tearing Yahweh's home down on earth?
It should be a pretty easy connection
there, huh?
But when you change your name to a Roman name, you should think that should be a clue, too.
Yeah. Paulos means lowly and little in Latin. That was his chosen name, a Latin Roman name. When in fact he was born as Shaul, which means question him. We have Glenn on the line. Kirk, hello, Glenn.
Hello, Kirk. Hello, Yana. How are you?
Yeah, good.
I know. I'm trying never to ask how are you. It's funny. I broke my own rule. It's very annoying.
Okay. We are fine. We are better than fine. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, when everybody does it, it gets to be a bit tedious.
It does. No, I understand how it is negative in the radio business. You're listening to us dig deeper into what did Yosha mean when he was talking to his learners, the disciples, about seeing to it that no one misleads them in connection with his overt condemnation of religion, followed by his presentation of the destruction of the temple.
Well, yeah, I was just actually thought about something else initially, but more importantly, what I was thinking about with regard to this is that he wept over Jerusalem, and Jesus only wept a couple times, and this short quote in the Bible, Jesus wept, right? But in this case, he wept over Jerusalem, saying that he would have gathered them as a hen gathers his chicks, but they would not. And because of that, this ultimately befell them.
Yes, matter of fact, that is the transition between his overt condemnation of religion in Matthew 23 and his specific, see to it that no one misleads you by claiming that he is the Christ and claiming to come in his name. It is, in fact, it says, O Jerusalem, and it's Jerusalem, as you know, it means the source from which teaching and guidance about reconciliation flow. O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her.
Right.
Well, you think there's a reason that he said that? What in context of his overt condemnation of rabbinical Judaism? Why do you think he made the transition to weeping by saying they stone the prophets and kill those who are sent to them?
Well, it emphasizes, that he's honoring their will. He says you would not, you did not want to, and he was foreshadowing his own death and the persecution of those who followed, and that's interesting.
But he's also making this point, which is that the religious leaders, the rabbis, rather than speaking on behalf of the prophets, rather than doing what we're attempting to do, which is to convey what Yahweh's prophets shared with us, they killed them. They didn't want to hear what they had to say.
And they replaced the Torah with the teachings of the fathers, which today we refer to with
tradition.
And then one further thing about the staff hall and the establishment of the church, you eventually have the evolution of the title of the Pope as Vicar of Christ. And vicar is where we get the word vicarious. It implies a substitute, someone there standing instead of that person.
That's what Satan wants to be, is the substitute.
Yeah.
He wants to substitute himself above the Most High. Exactly.
Yeah.
And, of course, where was the title Pope first used and by whom?
Roman. You lost it. Hadrian, perhaps?
Roman emperors. No, Hadrian actually wasn't the first. Of all the things that I enjoy, the thing that I enjoy the most is making connections. And not just connections, random connections between things that are happening in the world, but when you make connections based upon something God has said. And so here, this process of making a connection between Yosha's telling us that the home of the Father, of Yahweh, would be torn down. That it's not just the stones, but literally the very nature of Yahweh's home on earth was going to be torn down. And that he didn't want anyone to be misled. And he said, I want you to pay especially close attention to all this. Don't be misled. And then the next thing he says is that there will be many who claim this, that he is the Christ, that will come in his name, and they're going to mislead the most. Boy.
And he also said, call no man on earth your father, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, these people claim to be the father. The first to use the Pope title in Rome was Octavian, who renamed himself as Augustus, the Great One, as he deified himself. He was the first. Caligula used the title.
And we honor him with the name of a month in our calendar, as do we Julius.
That's right. Right. Exactly. Yeah, and his nephew, I guess his uncle, Julius, Julius is in Latin, was his uncle. And we honor him also, the first to claim that he was both man and God. The one who created the empire that Yahweh despised so much, Imperial Rome. And we honor him with a month in our calendar. In fact, we do this in the midst of our calendar to make the number, for example, Sept, as in September, that's 7. Oct is 8. Yeah, and we moved 7 to 9. We moved 8 to 10. You know, November and December are numbers. Months used to be known by numbers. And we moved them all around to accommodate these two men in the midst of our calendar who were disgusting. I mean, it's hard to imagine a vicious, self-righteous, misplaced, murderous ego that's greater than that displayed by Julius Caesar.
And I originally called with a sort of a bit of a tongue-in-cheek correction when you were talking about the Roman edifices and the Senate and Capitoline Hill and all that. I was going to point out that the Lincoln Memorial, the Greeks were known for their stark right angles. So Lincoln sits in a very much Grecian temple, while Jefferson has the domed Roman-type temple for his memorial. And just as Jefferson's Monticello has the Roman lines and Washington's Mount Vernon has the more squared Greek line. And then the Freemasons have the compass and the square. The square makes your right angles, and the compass makes your curves and circles.
Integrate them all. And while that is all edifying and enlightening and accurate, what the Romans ultimately did is when they devoured Greece, they became Greece.
Exactly. They became the pantheon. They kept the pantheon and gave the planetary gods new name.
Right. In fact, Trajan and then Hadrian after him, but Hadrian in particular, who would be, amongst the most hated people in all of history by God. His religious affinity was not to the Roman gods. No, he was one of the highest-ranking priests in the Order of Dionysus. Dionysus is the pagan son of the sun for whom Christianity is modeled.
Right. As much as Paul, I hate to say it, but this always makes me think of a line from Romans 1 where Paul talks about the worship of the creature rather than the creator. And I hate to say it, but you got that right at least. In other words, all this worshiping of planets and stars and moons and fertility and sexuality and agriculture and stuff, it's all worshiping of the creation as opposed to the creator.
Right. Well, and of course, when he was saying that, the creator that he wanted worshipped doesn't want to be worshipped. But the God that he was serving does want to be worshipped. That would be Satan.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it's one of those things. So much of what Paul wrote was partly true to give the impression that it could be trusted, when in fact even those things that are partly true are filled, riddled with errors. Yeah, like, worshiping the creation rather than the creator. Well, the real creator doesn't want to be worshipped.
Right.
And his God, the very Satan that he was possessed by, does want to be worshipped as Lord.
Right. Well, you could reasonably replace the word worship with honor. Yahweh, desires to be loved and honored, no doubt. Just as you're
or respected the way you would respect, love, and honor a parent, you know, as opposed
right.
to worship. Or,
yeah, respect is a respect. Reverence are all appropriate terms, but when respect and reverence transition to worship, then they're misplaced.
Yeah, that whole groveling thing going on, you know. And even the concept of doing the will of God, and I'm sure you recognize this from your previous occupation, you know, when someone is inclined to obsessive, or you're dealing with people who tend to be obsessive by nature, I mean, I've seen people who were so dysfunctionally obsessed with the notion of doing the will of God that they could hardly decide whether to have whole wheat toast or rye toast without discerning the will of God in the matter.
Right.
The fact is that the
will of Yahweh is very clearly delineated. So anybody who stresses over wanting to know the will of God for their lives is simply ignorant of what the Torah teaches. The will of Yahweh for our lives is really, really simple. And that is to be observant so that we come to know, to be thoughtful, making connections so that we come to understand His family-oriented relationship as it's presented in the Torah, and then participate in it. I don't think His will extends past that. Beyond it.
Yeah, this reminds me also of a bait-and-switch thing that goes on with Christianity. Did you ever notice that with Christianity, when they're trying to get people in the door and to commit up to the altar and stuff, they make everything sound easy peasy, but then once you're in, then they start browbeating you, and you're not doing enough, you're wrong, you know, you have to give more to more, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So anyway.
It's just like Freemasonry. It's like every religious system that was, the initiate was told everything's easy peasy as you come in, and then over time, they are burdened with more and more.
Right, and that's counter to the character of God. Yahweh. You know,
Yahweh does burden us to some degree initially. You've got to prioritize knowing Him. You've got to observe what He had to say. You've got to think about it. You need to respond. But once you're in, there are no requirements. Once you're in, you're completely liberated. There are no burdens. So it's the antithesis of God's approach.
Well, Yahweh's truthful, He's up front, and He's forthright. It's not bait and switch manipulation.
You're right. Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
You know,
I would agree. Go ahead, Kirk.
No, if you want to make it into the Lord Hall of Fame, you'd hardly start your covenant with, I would like you of your own accord to walk away, you know, of your own volition.
You're right.
I mean, it's just...
Yeah. Let's go one step back from there.
Uh-huh. Sure.
How many languages do you know where every mood that's associated with that language conveys volition? First, second, or third person volition?
One.
Hebrew. How many languages do you know that have this concept of a stem where every verb is shaped to convey an aspect of relationship?
I steal it, Hebrew.
You're still at Hebrew. I mean, he constructed a language that specifically speaks of relationships that are offered under the auspices of free will.
Right. It's just wrong language if you're going to be a Lord.
If you're going to be a Lord, what is the word that is the single most important to a Lord that you would have to have as the central pillar of your dialect if you were
obey.
Going to create a language to be? Oh yeah,
obey.
Obey.
Okay. That's what I was gonna say. Yeah.
Yeah. Obey. And what word doesn't exist in Hebrew?
Obey.
Obey. Yeah, Hebrew was specifically created to convey Yahweh's will. And now, you know, what's so interesting here, you talk about the Christian, how they get all wrapped up in their religion and can't become dysfunctional because they're trying to ascertain if it's Yahweh's will if they have a bagel or a French roll. Yeah, for breakfast. And what flavor of pie they should order. based upon the volitional stems of Hebrew and the volitional moods of Hebrew and the relational stems of Hebrew, is Yahweh trying to dictate to us His will? Is He trying to impose His will? Does He want us to look at Him as someone who is going to dictate whether we should have a bagel or French toast?
You could care less. You couldn't care.
Absolutely. In fact, what He wants us to do is choose of our own volition. No, He's not asking you to turn to Him and say, "Hey, what do you want me to do here, God?" No. He's saying exactly the opposite. He's saying, "What do you want to do? Glenn, what do you want to do? Kirk, what do you want to do? What sounds fun to you?"
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I will tell you that when what sounds fun to me and when what I want to do is consistent with what He enjoys doing, I'm a lot happier. I find that a lot more fulfilling. So if it's His will that I observe His testimony, and I observe His testimony, I find that highly satisfactory, fulfilling. He knows what He's talking about. It seems so obvious. That's the way so many things are when you study Yahweh's testimony. Kirk, I know you've mentioned this on so many occasions, that when you engage in really being observant, from the proper perspective, virtually everything that God has to tell us is obvious. And as you read this, isn't it just obvious? I mean, he says, "And Yahusha came out of the temple and was going away when his disciples came up to the point and pointed out the temple buildings to him." So they're focused on the temple buildings. And he said to them, "Do you not see these things?" He said, "Are you not observant?" You know, he was just chastising the religious establishment. "Are you not observant? Don't you see what's going on around you? Can't you make the connections?" He's asking them, these are right-sighted individuals, and he says, "Are you blind? Why aren't you observing what I'm talking about? Why can't you make the connections?" He says, "Truly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left upon another, which shall not be torn down." Talking about tearing down what the temple represents, Yahweh's home, in His capital, His city. He's just talking about Jerusalem. And he was sitting on the Mount of Olives, where you overlook the Temple Mount. And his disciples came to him privately and says, "Tell us when these things will be." And Yahusha said to them, "See to it that no one misleads you." He realized that keeping them from being misled was far more important than telling them when.
Plus, that is the trigger.
Yes.
That is prophetic as well. When that guy shows up, which he'll mention later.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. When will that temple be torn down?
Well, this is
and he says, "See to it that no one misleads you, for many will come in my name." Boy, didn't Paul claim to come in his name?
He did, and he
was appointed by him, uses his name throughout his testimony, never quotes him,
no,
contradicts everything he had to say, but claimed to come in his name and claimed that he was the Christ.
He had to fulfill the rest.
And will mislead many. Is there anyone who, throughout all of human history, who has misled more people than Paul?
None.
Did anyone, are you familiar with anyone in all of human history who wrote their primary treatise, the cornerstone of their religion is based on a letter called Romans, the very people who tore down the temple. And in Romans, he says that the Torah is to be equated to a dead husband. 7th chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 13th chapter, he said that his God established that Roman government, and we should surrender to it. Wow.
And then he goes on to say that he completes in his body that which is lacking in the sufferings of Christ. And,
right.
Boy, you really have to tap dance to make some kind of sense out of that one. You know, I here. There are all sorts of ways, but, you know, when push comes to shove, it just comes across as plain old pomposity, you know.
Yes,
my
right.
Body, that right. Which was lacking in the sufferings of Galsha.
Right. The savior of Pauline Christianity is Paul. The messenger of Pauline Christianity is Paul. The founder of Christianity is Paul. Paul is the Savior. He is the very Christ that he speaks of. It's what I say.
Well, it's even told Paul. That he saved the church, the quote-unquote church, from those terrible disciples that didn't get it.
Yeah. Oh, he went to...
If he didn't come...
Who was it that... Yeah, who was it that Paul went to war against, that Yosha says, see to it that no one misleads you? Who was it that claimed to speak for him that was contradictory to everything the disciples stood for?
Yeah, well, Paul,
only one
Paul,
man.
Yeah, it's
Paul. How did we miss Paul in all of this?
Well, you can't if you had a brain.
Yeah, but I did for years.
Well, I don't know.
Until Jason pointed it out.
Yeah.
How did we miss Christianity in all of this? He is... beginning right there and saying, who tore down the temple? Who tore down Jerusalem as the center of Yahweh's will and special place on earth? Who did that?
It has to be Paul.
The Romans and Christianity that grew out of the Roman Catholic Church.
Yeah.
And its author, its founder, Paul.
Saul.
Yeah. He begins this transition of what will happen next. By talking about the misleading doctrine of Roman Catholicism, of Paul's poison pen. I'll be back tomorrow.